Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
All right, more discussion about the playoff game Sunday night in Tampa coming up this hour. But yesterday was significant. The president signed the RFK bill at the White House, surrounded by Josh Harris, Mitchell Rales, and Mark Ein, and the mayor of our city, Mayor Muriel Bowser. Eric Flack's been covering this story in a major way for a long time now. He is at Channel 5, at Eric Flack TV on Twitter, on X. He joins us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. So, we knew this was coming, obviously, because it was an 11th hour deal. By the way, I haven't talked to you since, you know, kind of that 2 a.m. Solo vote on the RFK site bill. That was a pretty wild, you know, 2 or 3 days. And it really did, right, Eric? It looked dead before it was resurrected, you know, after midnight on whatever date that was, December 20th or whatever it was.
Yeah, I mean, I think that between the team's Capitol Hill, operatives and the mayor's Senate operatives, they had this card in their back pocket, but it was so tenuous that there were zero leaks. There were zero leaks to people like me. There were no other leaks to other journalists out there that I saw. Because one senator literally could have, if they were motivated to, stuck around until 1:14
sure.
in the morning, they would have had to do that. And so I think they knew that they had to use a bad pun, a Hail Mary option that they felt pretty good about, but I know that nobody even on the team or on the mayor's side really celebrated until they heard, Chuck Schumer, the majority leader, pass that vote at 1:14 in the morning with just Tim Kaine in the room there from Virginia.
Eric, it's interesting because Schumer was the one that essentially said, don't look at me, or that's what we thought, go work this out he essentially said, go work this out with Maryland. And, you know, with Van Hollen and with Cardin. But the ace up their sleeve, essentially what you're saying is that Schumer, if all else failed and this wasn't attached to as a rider to that, you know, the defense spending bill, that he would do this if all else failed, essentially, was what they had as a go-to at the 11th hour.
I think they knew that as long as they worked out this deal, and there was a lot of 11th hour massaging of individual senators cutting deals with Mike Lee of Utah about D.C. somehow compensating
right.
for the land if they built a stadium there. And, you know, there are a lot of different the fighter jets and all the things. But I think he was fine with it. As long as it didn't become a distraction and everybody on his side was fine with it as well. And ultimately, that's what ended up happening. And ultimately, ironically, as you point out, Schumer was the one who delivers the news at 1:14 and will go down in history kind of as the one who kind of officially brought that land back to D.C.
All right. You and I and people who are paying attention to this story understand that this RFK site bill being passed does not mean that they have a deal to build the stadium there. So why don't you take everybody through what comes next chronologically and, you know, before we actually end up with a deal. What's the time frame now, and when do the city and the team, and we both know they've already had discussions and may have the framework for a potential deal as well, but when does this thing, you know, become a real negotiation? When does the D.C. City Council end up voting on it? Give me and everybody else kind of a sense of the timeline of the next few months.
So I think there's two things there. One, I think negotiations are happening in full right now, but there is a procedural process called a land transfer, and the land actually technically has to be transferred. It's still under D.C. control till like 2037 based on the first RFK agreement.
Right.
This is going to extend it for 99 years, and there is a legal process, paperwork, I's to be dotted and T's to be crossed, that has to happen, that kind of spell out, you know, some of the handshake agreements that have happened. For example, you know, whether or not D.C. ends up, you know, having to put money back into, you know, parkland if they build a stadium. Those would all go in this land transfer agreement. A lot of these handshake back office deals are going to go into this land transfer agreement that has to be actually signed, sealed, and delivered before the land is officially, you know, in D.C. control. They have 180 days to do that. That work is ongoing right now. D.C. Council really, you would have to imagine, can't really, you know, vote on anything until that land transfer is complete, because the land transfer very well may have impacts on what the city's financial responsibility is on any sort of deal with the Washington Commanders. But you are under a timeline that everybody is well aware, and we've spoken about before, to get this deal done so the work can move forward. D.C. is, you know, at the, you know, kind of walking and chewing gum at the same time, trying to figure out, you know, a timeline for tearing down RFK while what the plans are going to be for the new RFK. Mayor has promised everything from, you know, retail to you know, housing and a stadium. So we've got to see how they're going to get that done. So, I mean, there's this 180-day land transfer timeline, and then that takes us kind of, you know, to the middle of 2025, and then you got to think that it's after that that the council can ultimately vote on a deal. But I think, you know, what I've been told is the land transfer has to be done first before it can officially move forward with the council. But obviously, there's going to be, you know, they're not going to wait to start on the deal until the land transfer is done. You know, there's going to be parallel things happening at one time.
Do you see any kind of surprises with just this land transfer agreement? They have 180 days to do it. I mean, we've been surprised with fighter jets, et cetera. Is there any sort of surprise there that could come about?
I don't think so, because, I mean, the land transfer agreement, you know, I guess to the extent that it is unclear, so let's talk about Mike Lee and the Utah and putting the land back into federal, putting the money back into federal land if they use it, equivalent value. You know, does that mean any parkland or Rock Creek Park? Or is that the federal parkland that they're building the stadium on? Meaning, can that money kind of be funneled back into the stadium and the city's financial responsibility? You know, we had talked about in the past how you can get stadium money from the NFL, and it's kind of a loan to build the stadium.
Right.
But you repay
it's like
it,
$300 million, right?
$300 million, and you repay it in money you were already going to pay the league.
Yep.
This would be a similar thing. Well, I have to repay as D.C. the value of the federal land if I build a stadium there. But if I'm putting that money into improvements to the same site we're building on as my, you know, part of my financial responsibility to the Commanders, then I'm really not paying much at all, and I'm satisfying this deal with Mike Lee. Those details will be interesting. You know, how are they're going to preserve parking? They got to preserve a lot of the environmental land, and those are going to be kind of the details that we're going to see in this land transfer agreement. But I don't expect any huge surprises there.
I mean, I want to just make sure I'm clear on one thing. Mike Lee doesn't have as much leverage today as he did three weeks ago.
No. I mean, this is a land transfer agreement that they just have to satisfy. Yes.
Do you see the team and the city entering into some sort of an exclusive negotiating period?
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. You know, the mayor, the answer is no, because I was messaging, and one of the story I'm working on today, quite honestly, is, hey, Maryland, how did you feel about that picture with all of Commander's ownership standing there next to Mayor Bowser in the Oval Office? Hey, Virginia, because, I mean, you know the reaction on social media. It was like, here we go. This is a done deal. I've already reached out to people on the team and saying, everybody thinks this is a done deal, and they are already telling me, no, this is not a done deal. But you look at the statement itself, and there's kind of a little asterisk at the end of the team's social media post that says, well, we're just really glad they're going to have a seat at the table. Meanwhile, Josh Harris, Mark Ein, and Mitch Rales are smiling from ear to ear.
Yeah.
And you think they're smiling from ear to ear because they're going to see a residential retail facility built that has nothing to do with a football stadium? You know, I know they're all, you know, Harris is a big, like, you know, developer, but that's not the development he's excited about. But there, so the question was exclusive, and I say no, because they are still, they're still continuing with the, what I would like to, you know, in my opinion, is a facade, but, you know, that's my opinion, not fact, that this is still an open competition. And so we're going to see what Maryland and Virginia, Loudoun County say, if anything, today, along the lines of, I mean, what did you think? Do you think this thing is still going? But if you do have an exclusive negotiating period, then I think you kind of take that idea that this is still an open competition, kind of out of
well, if I'm the team, if I'm Harris and Company, I need to know sooner rather than later if I'm going to get 7 votes on the DC Council for the deal that we've sort of kind of come to an agreement on in terms of the framework, because they've been talking about what the deal would look like and what the city ultimately would put up towards this new project, $1 billion. You know what the numbers are. I think it's $1 billion, somewhere around there, maybe a little bit more, because they don't want to get drawn out. So maybe some sort of 180 day or shorter exclusive negotiating period to get this thing finalized. But to your point, they can't really vote on a deal until the land transfer happens. You gotta, from the team standpoint, from ownership standpoint, Eric, you can't have this thing just get drawn out, and then find out, it's going to be 7-6 one way or the other on the vote.
So what Bowser would say, the only thing I'd push back on that part, Kevin, is she will say, well, it didn't look like we had the votes until we had the votes for Nats Park.
Right.
And she will hearken back to, a negotiation that you probably remember, I remember, but not everybody remembers, that was contentious too.
Yeah.
And it wasn't going to happen until it happened. And Bowser's going to say, I got a way to happen. I also can tell you that the team has already, for months, been working the council members. And a lot of the council members, some if not all, have already met with the team. And so the team has a little bit of an idea about what that count is and who's leaning what way. And so, I think that, again, if they don't feel good about DC Council and this deal getting done, do they show up for that photo op? I mean, can they come to the Oval Office ceremony and not take that smiling photo op? To me, pictures speak 1,000 words. I work in television. And, I don't think you can undo, put the toothpaste back in the tube, that visual.
Yeah.
And tell me that that's all about them just being happy that D.C. now has, its own, can control its own destiny.
Right. All right. Well, I mean, this is going to be a saga that plays out, for another few months. I mean, right now, if I were to say where and when the deal is announced, Give me the location and give me when we get, all right, we got a deal and shovels go into the ground on this day to start the process.
Makes a lot of sense for the beginning of the 2025 football season, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, like, that gives you time.
Didn't we think that was going to be the case with some sort of an announcement in September of 2024?
We did. We did. But we can keep on, like, pushing the goalposts back a little bit. I mean, it gives you time to I if I'm not mistaken, the Nats Park deal was also kind of like end of summer, something like that.
Yeah.
And so it kind of gives you the and don't quote me on that part, but it gives you the time to work out the land transfer. It gives you the time to like hammer out the deal and not be the issue of 2025, you know, DC Council is hammering out this deal. And then, you know, you announce a thing and then you have some big ceremony to coincide with the beginning of the 2025 football season. It's that sells tickets. It serves so many purposes for the teams. It drives excitement, which is, you know, obviously regardless of how this season ends, they're going to go into 2025 with so much excitement, so much hope, so much promise. And you have to believe that a clear-cut stadium vision and those plans being out there and coming in 2030 to 2031, coming fall 2030, your new stadium. I mean, we know that they already have the plans. They know what it's going to look like. I bet the mayor knows what it's going to look like, you know? And so, I mean, being able to announce that and have a big ceremony that coincides with the beginning of the 2025 football season makes a lot of sense financially, business-wise, as well as meeting the timeline to get that stadium done.
Good job, as always. Really appreciate the time, and we will obviously be in touch as this story continues to develop. Thanks, Eric, as always.
Anytime, brother. See you. Bye.
Eric Flack from Channel 9, at Eric Flack TV on Twitter X. Denton's News when we return. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, and the team980.com. All right, Dem, what do you got?
All right, we're going to start with some breaking news in the NFL. The Tennessee Titans earlier this hour firing Rand Carthen as their general manager, but they're keeping Callahan as the head coach. But Carthen is out. I think he had like 40 years left on his contract. The Titans have the number one overall pick in this upcoming year's draft.
You know, a bit of a sought-after guy, but I think this is what happens when you miss on the QB. They took Levis in 23, right? Would that have been his first draft in Tennessee? So with the 49ers, with Adam Peters, what was his first year in Tennessee?
He was hired in Tennessee in 2024.
Oh, okay. So he didn't draft
Levis. No, sorry. He was in 2023, and then he got a new title. So he was general manager in 2023. He became the executive vice president and general manager in 2024, and now he does not have a job.
Okay, so he did draft Levis.
He did draft Levis, yes.
Yeah. You know, you are, as a coach and a general manager, you are always vulnerable when you don't have a quarterback, and the quarterbacks that you're trying out, that you select, or you trade for, or you sign in free agency, you are at their... you're on your knees in front of them, begging them to be the right call, because Levis has been terrible. He can't play. Now, I say that, and maybe in 5 years, when he's 30 years old, we'll be like, oh my God, Will Levis. I mean, he resurrected his career. He got into a system that worked better for him or whatever. I mean, we've seen that, you know, before this year, obviously. Last year, obviously. Geno Smith and Sam Darnold being the more recent examples of that. Baker Mayfield being an example of that. But I don't know, man. Levis really looks like just a big, strong, strapping athlete with a big arm that just doesn't see it ever. And because of it, they have stunk. And the guy that was keeping that team and that franchise without a quarterback over and over again, competitive, was Vrabel. Vrabel's going to get a gig, right?
Yes, and it was, if I remember correctly, Rand Carthen and Mike Vrabel, not fans of one another. Vrabel wanted more power. Carthen said, I have the power. Now both of them are gone. But I do think there's an interesting twist here, Kevin, because as you mentioned, Vrabel going to be very sought after. Ben Johnson for the third year in a row going to be very sought after. There's been rumors that whenever he takes a job, he wants to bring Lance Newmark with him. Lance Newmark obviously works
Ben
here.
Johnson does, you're saying. Not
yes,
Vrabel.
Ben Johnson
yes.
does.
Yeah.
Is there a potential that if Lance Newmark leaves, that Rand Carthon then takes his position here?
Maybe.
Because he and Adam Peters have a connection.
Sure. By the way, they work together. We don't know how they feel about each other. We just know that Rand Carthon was in San Francisco for a few years at the same time that Adam Peters was. You know, there's always that assumption, oh, there's a tie there. They work together. They'll hire him. Well, maybe they work together, and because of that, Adam Peters doesn't feel great about hiring him based on really knowing him. You never know. But it's possible, sure.
But didn't it feel like last year it was one of the reasons why Vrabel was never a contender here is because of the issues that he had with Rand Carthon? I thought that was what we were kind
of
leaning
on. That was definitely part. You're right. That was definitely part of the conversation. Yeah.
So using that logic, it would be fair to think they're at least friendly because you're not going to not
If we're
hire
right about that.
If we're right
was
about
just,
that.
That was a connecting the dots situation. We don't know that the dots should have been connected. You know, I mean, no one reported that Adam Peters wasn't interested in Vrabel because of his relationship with Rand Carthon. We just all, you know, connected the dots and said they were together in San Francisco. They're not interested in Vrabel. It must be because Rand Carthon told Adam Peters, don't be interested in Vrabel.
Right. Anyway, so he's on the open market. I do have some other NFL stuff, but I want to give you...
It's nice not to be in coaching search mode or GM searching mode. I mean, we weren't ever in GM searching mode when Snyder was the owner, but it's nice not to be, you know, in the carousel, you know, on the carousel, I guess, not in the carousel, on the carousel. We've taken that ride many times.
It's nice not to be the one where people are doing eyeball emojis on Twitter because they can't believe you fired such and such, or they can't believe you let go of such and such.
Yeah.
Because we've been there multiple times.
What do we have? Just real quickly, what do we have? We have Jacksonville. We have Tennessee. No, we don't have Tennessee.
No,
we have Tennessee with the GM.
Yeah, Tennessee GM. You have the Jets. You have the Bears.
Jets, Bears.
You have the Patriots.
Saints.
Saints.
Patriots.
That's five. A lot of people thought Antonio Pierce in Las Vegas. Maybe that happens this week, but we've heard nothing there. A lot of people kind of thought Tennessee, if you're going to fire the GM, you might as well fire the coach.
Yeah,
that
it's
hasn't
tough
happened.
To fire the coach after 1 year, but we've seen it happen. We just saw it happen in New England.
We thought the Giants, that's not happening. And we thought the Cowboys, which has not been made official, though his contract, Mike McCarthy's, does, ends tomorrow. But then he enters an exclusive negotiating period with the Dallas Cowboys.
Jerry... So there are two things. Do you have, just out of curiosity, the John Mara soundbite about they, you know, we better perform next year? I'm paraphrasing, but basically it was kind of this threat about, you know, keeping Dable and Shane and it better happen. I mean, they tanked down the stretch. Okay, they dumped the quarterback. You have to, as an owner in that particular situation, when you've actually made a controversial decision to stay the course with a lot of fans, you can't then side with the fans after you've made the decision.
I do have that clip, by the way. It's short, but this is Mara talking to people, the media, on the practice field yesterday.
How long will it take to improve the product, John?
It better not take too long, Bruce, because I've just about run out of patience.
You just made the decision to stay the course. Show some confidence in it publicly. I mean, he's not his father. That is for sure. I mean, look at the coaches they've had in recent years. Where's the list here? I want to pull it up because it's like five coaches in the last 7 or 8 years, right? Dable, Judge, Shermer, Spagnuolo, McAdoo. Five coaches since Coughlin left in 2015. Five. in 9 years.
I totally forgot Steve Spagnuolo was the coach there.
I heard that on something coming in this morning, and I was like, you can't, as the owner of the football team, make a decision which was surprising to everybody, bringing it all back. You have to say publicly, I'm bringing it all back because I believe in Joe Shane. I believe in Brian Daboll. You know, we made some big decisions this year to move on from the quarterback. I trust in their decisions, and I think we're heading in the right direction. I mean, he basically sided up with the fans saying, why did this owner, me, do this? It better work. And meantime, Jerry basically told people that he's fine with McCarthy. If McCarthy doesn't want to be here, we don't want people who don't want to be here. Think about that one. He hasn't made it clear to McCarthy that he wants McCarthy. So why wouldn't McCarthy, as a free agent here shortly, when the contract officially runs out, be looking for a gig if Jerry hasn't signed him to an extension? I'll tell you what, our division, we got two incredibly dysfunctional franchises in our division, and neither one of them is our franchise anymore.
That's great.
The Cowboys and the Giants right now are a mess. And for years, 25 of them, 24 of them anyway, Washington, bottom cellar dweller, dysfunction beyond any organization in the league, certainly in our division. And now we're not one of them, and there are two of them in the division. Not every division has two teams that have dysfunctional organizations. We're in a division where we've got two franchises that are from the top down dysfunctional right now. It's great. Creates opportunities. Now, the Giants could strike it rich on the quarterback. They could get lucky, get the right one, Shedeur Sanders, Cam Ward, and turn it around, because that's what it takes. You know, a great quarterback masks all else. And they're going to have an opportunity to draft one, and maybe they get it right. But that John Mara quote, man, publicly, when you make that call, you got to say, it's because I believe in these two men. I know it doesn't look great, you know, but I like them. I believe in them. I think that they've made some good decisions here, and I think we're going to, I think we're in position with draft and otherwise to make, you know, a big turnaround. I wouldn't have kept these gentlemen on if I wasn't totally confident that we're about to turn this around. And instead, he became a fan. Can't do that as an owner. What else?
I want to give you there's some other NFL stuff, but I want to give you an opportunity. We didn't get to talk about this yesterday because it was a Monday. We focus on football, but your Terps had a tough one against Oregon, 83-79 on Sunday. They're back in action against UCLA later this week. But what did you think about the Terps and their loss against Oregon?
So I'm going to tell you, I mean, I think maybe it's the first game I haven't seen in live in a couple of years. I mean, we had football going on. I came in to do a post-game podcast after the game, so I did not watch the game. But it's a tough weekend for Maryland. I know that Washington nearly knocked off Illinois in their next game, but the Terps haven't beaten anybody, you know, legitimately good. Villanova's not that good. Syracuse isn't good. Ohio State's not great. The best teams they've played, Purdue and Marquette and Oregon, they've lost all of those games, and all of those games were close games, so they didn't win any. You know, they haven't won some close games. I know that that's bothering fans. Look, Oregon's a top 10 team. They had been blown out by Illinois on Friday night, and the Terps had a lead. You know, they had a halftime lead. They had a lead in the second half. They ended up losing by four. I can't tell you specifics about the game because, you know, these games that are played on NFL Sundays for, you know, guys like me who are fans of a college basketball team, it hurts, you know, the scheduling on some of these. It's all television. You know, as a school, you're not going to turn down the TV money. It was on Peacock on Sunday. They play UCLA on Friday night at home. They are not going to be ranked, clearly, after being ranked last week in the coaches' poll. But the Washington loss was painful to watch. They really were off and didn't rebound well, didn't shoot well. I know that they played better against Oregon, but, you know, they got to win some close games, man. Got to win some close games because you're going to be in a lot of them. And last year, you know, there were some really close games that they had a chance to win and didn't. I remember there was, you know, back-to-back games against Rutgers and Ohio State last year. I mean, both winnable games. Couldn't pull either one of them out. Now, they did not have the team last year. They have this year. But, yeah, big game against UCLA on Friday night. UCLA ranked, and they're in the top 20, right? Top 25?
Top 22.
Yeah, and I think, you know, they've got a stretch of like three home games in their next four, so hopefully they can get right. But, yeah, not a good first West Coast conference trip for the Terps. A loss to Washington and a loss to Oregon. All right, what else?
All right, back to the NFL. I don't know if you saw this story, but I saw it, and it is kind of sad. Now, it might, in a sense, potentially benefit the Commanders if they need safety help, but 49er safety Chavarius Ward is unlikely to return to San Francisco. It's nothing to do in terms of like bad blood with the organization. It's a more traumatic experience. He lost his one-year-old daughter, and he shared after the season ended that he is having issues literally every time he enters the state of California. His girl has moved out because of the trauma related to the passing of their daughter. It's one of the sadder things that I think I've seen. It's like a five-minute video, and your heart is just breaking the entire time. That's a tough thing to deal with, and I'm proud of him for speaking out, but I saw this, Kevin, and I was like, this is one of the few times I think we've ever seen something like this in the NFL about a guy just not being able to handle being in the state.
So because he lost his one-year-old, you said?
Yeah, one-year-old. He has PTSD.
In the state of California, they just don't want to be in the state of California because it's just a reminder.
It's just a constant reminder of loss.
Mm-hmm. That's awful.
It's terrible. I mean, now, he has a connection with Adam Peters. He's a good player. I mean, he's been on he was on a lot of their really good defenses.
Right.
He's a really good player, but you just read that and your heart breaks for him.
Remember, he was with Kansas City for a couple of years and played well.
Yeah, he had a lot of jewelry from some of these teams.
How many Super Bowl – what does he have, two Super Bowl rings with the Chiefs?
I'm looking up his Super Bowl wins now. He has one. He has one. He was a second team All Pro though last year in 2023.
Yeah, he's a good player. That's sad. I don't know what his contract situation is. Because when you get down to, okay, we want to do the right thing by the player if the 49ers choose to do that.
His contract, it was 3 years in 2022, so this was the final year of the deal.
Okay, so well, is he a free agent?
I don't know if he's restricted or unrestricted, but yeah, he should be a free agent.
Yeah. All right. What else?
All right. Other football news. Rex Ryan says he is 100% the best option for the Jets head coaching position. He did interview. We've seen a lot of names in that Jets interview process. Ron Rivera was one of them, but it seems like Sexy Rexy wants to head back to New York.
Yeah. I can't imagine Rex Ryan's going to get a job at this point. I mean, I'll give him credit. You and I were talking about this Joy Taylor thing. You can bring it up here in the news.
I was going to.
If you want to. I don't watch, and I can't tell you that I've ever watched the Fox Sports Network shows, which is when I told you I had no idea who that person was. But anyway, Rex is a big part of the ESPN, shows, Revolving Chairs. And I'll tell you, man, he gets after people in the league. He is not afraid to totally rip somebody a new one. I saw and read on X this morning, apparently he just ripped Brian Flores he basically called him an overrated coach. And, man, he has had some really good defensive days in Minnesota as their D coordinator. I can't see Rex getting a gig, right? What is Rex's – I want to look this up because Rex – I mean, two AFC title games, right?
Yeah, with Mark Sanchez.
Huh?
With Mark Sanchez. Yeah,
with Mark Sanchez at quarterback, what is his – he's got to have an overall winning record as a head coach. Two AFC championship visits. overall as a head coach. Actually, he's got a losing record. It was his first 2 years, and man, they were good defensively, right? They got to the AFC title game and lost to the Colts. I think that was the year that they went to New England and won.
Yes, it was.
Did they go to New England twice and win?
They might have done it twice. That was when Darrell Revis was there. It was Revo Island.
Yeah, and they lost to the Steelers in the AFC title game as well, 2009-2010. And then after that, he never had a winning season as a head coach again. He had 3 8-8 seasons, including 2 in New York and 1 in Buffalo.
They beat the Patriots in 2010. They did not play them in the playoffs in 2009.
In 2009, hold on, don't tell me. Who did they beat in 2009 to get to the AFC title game? They weren't the division winner. They were a wild card winner.
Right.
Because the Patriots had that run of winning the division. Is that the year? Did they beat the Bengals that year?
Maybe? Yeah, the Bengals and Chargers. You are correct.
Bengals and Chargers.
Yeah, your boy Philip Rivers.
Yeah, with Rivers.
Past him.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, they beat the Chargers. Mark Sanchez went 12 of 23 for 100 yards and a touchdown and a pick.
Yeah, I mean, they just lived off of defense. I don't know if you can do that anymore. Can you win 3 straight playoff games to get to a Super Bowl with just defense in today's NFL?
Well, we saw the 49ers do it a couple of years ago when they had
Jimmy G.
Kind of
saw the Chiefs do it last year.
Yeah, the Chiefs actually did it too. I mean, Jimmy G and Mahomes are very different, obviously, so is Sanchez. But I would say the 49ers a couple of years ago when they did that with defense is very comparable to what the Jets did when they had Mark Sanchez. I just don't know that you can do that consistently. You get like one good year, and then the 49ers were like, we need a better quarterback because Jimmy G missed a wide-open Emmanuel Sanders for a go-ahead touchdown in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and look, I said the Chiefs because the strength of the Chiefs team last year and this year is their defense, but obviously they have the guy that can make all of the plays when the game is on the line, and that's what happened in Buffalo and in Baltimore last year. Okay, what else?
All right, how about Kevin O'Connell saying that... Actually, hold on. Let me get to this Fox Sports thing. This is what people care
about. Well, real quickly, before we get to the Fox thing. So, Kevin O'Connell, his contract runs out this year?
There was a rumor that I read. I don't know how much I would put into it, but there was a rumor that I had read that people were trying to trade for Kevin O'Connell. Other teams looking to go after
him. What's the issue with Kwesi, the GM and the owner?
They just haven't extended him.
Why?
I couldn't tell you. I mean, he got a lot out of this, Sam Darnold-led team. With all due respect to Sam, I know the 49ers liked him, but this is the first time we've ever seen Sam Darnold play the way that he has, and I think you can put a large majority of that on the shoulders of Kevin O'Connell and what the offense... The simplicity of the offense or the way that they molded Sam Darnold rather into what they were doing offensively, the fact that he doesn't have an extension right now is head-scratching.
So he only got... This is his third year, okay?
Yes.
He only got a 3-year deal?
I believe
so. No, that's not possible. 4 years is the minimum.
4 years, but if you're entering that final year of the contract without an extension, kind of a deal.
Kevin O'Connell, okay, in 3 seasons in Minnesota, is 34-17. He won the division in 2022. Last year, remember, they were on the verge of completely getting onto a roll when you-know-who tore his Achilles. I don't think that Kirk had played at a higher level in his career than he had played for the 2 or 3 games prior to the injury. And so that season fell apart. They went 7-10. And then this year, 14-3. Are you kidding me? You got Kevin O'Connell is an excellent offensive head coach, excellent play caller, and I think is very well liked and respected and organized, and that's surprising me. Although, let me just say that out of all of the assistants that came out of the Shanahan era here that ended up being a head coach, I've had many people tell me over the years that Kevin was the one that they least thought of going on to be a successful head coach. Like, everybody knew Kyle, everybody knew Sean, people, really were impressed with guys like Matt LaFleur, et cetera. But that's strange. What would they get for him in a trade?
Probably draft picks. You know, I looked up the list. This is not a new thing in the NFL, but it's not necessarily a normal thing either. There have been seven guys, head coaches, that have been traded. Bruce Arians was the most recent one in 2019. He was traded to the Buccaneers from the Arizona Cardinals. A couple other notable names, Herm Edwards in 2006, John Gruden in 2002.
Right, I remember that.
A championship. I don't think that most
people... What
about
Belichick? The Jets got picks for him going to the
Patriots. I was about to say, I don't think that most people realize Belichick was traded. Yeah,
That was a famous situation. He had basically committed to the Jets and then changed his mind.
Yeah, they traded him. Mike Holmgren was traded in 1999 to the Seahawks. Bill Parcells in 97. And then the very first coach, at least on the list I'm reading, Don Shula was traded to the Dolphins in 1970.
Yeah, from the Colts.
Yeah, yeah, that worked out pretty well.
Right. It was Klosterman, and I forget the interesting. Well, I don't know why you would trade him after 3 years of going 34-17 and being in the postseason twice, and the only year that they didn't go to the postseason, they lost their starting quarterback to a torn Achilles when he was playing at the highest level of his career.
Right.
So that makes no sense.
All right, how about the Fox thing? So this broke over the weekend. It is like this crazy lawsuit of there's so much layers to this, but the big talking point is Joy Taylor and Skip Bayless and sexual misconduct in Fox Sports. This has been huge, massive news. This lawsuit that is the defendant in the lawsuit, or the accuser, I guess, rather, is the plaintiff, the hairdresser at Fox Sports, the one that's involved with making sure all the people on camera look good, hair looking good, haircuts, what have you. She's accusing Skip Bayless of trying to pay her $1.5 million to have sex.
And the hairdresser is.
The hairdresser is.
$1.5
million. $1.5
million. Okay, you got to slow down here for a moment, and I think we probably should take a break and then come back.
We can do that.
Because I think there are a lot of people listening that are like me, that don't know the characters involved. I'm being serious, too. I mean, this is the Fox Sports Network. This isn't Fox Sports with, you know, the that televised the NFL games. This is the Fox Sports Cable Network, which basically generates zeros for ratings for the most part. So I think we got to start over and go slowly, because I had never heard of Joy Taylor before social media and kind of trying to follow the story from afar, because Skip Bayless was involved in it. We all know who Skip Bayless is. So we'll do a little bit of this, a very little bit, when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com. All right, Denton, is part of his news, wants to share the details of this Joy Taylor situation at Fox Sports. So let's just start with, tell everybody who Joy Taylor is.
So Joy Taylor is the younger sister of former Redskins legend, Jason Taylor. Tongue
really?
Placed firmly in cheek when I call him Redskins legend. But yes.
Yeah, right. So Jason Taylor is her older brother.
Yes.
Is this relevant to the story?
Kind of.
Okay.
But also, no. I'll explain why it's yes and no in a second.
Okay.
But she has been a longtime voice and face on the Fox channel, the Fox Sports channel, both on television
really
and
long
radio.
Time?
Yeah, because she's been around on with that company for at least 5 or 6 years.
Had never heard of her.
Right.
I'm not the best at this because I don't watch a lot of those network talking head shows. I'll admit that. Never heard of her. Saw the picture and the face was recognizable. So it's not like I was like never seen her before, but I would have never been able to tell you who Joy Taylor was.
So she for a number of years was the Robin to Colin Cowherd's Batman. So I don't know that you've ever watched Colin Cowherd's show, but he has the big desk. He has a team of producers, and then he has a second microphone that basically does kind of what I do. News updates, chimes in every now and then. She was that for Colin Cowherd. And that's how she kind of got her start at Fox. And then she climbed up the ladder doing the Undisputed show with Shannon and Skip Bayless. Skip Bayless mentioned in this lawsuit as well. And then she...
Shannon Sharp now does Stephen A. Smith on ESPN, right?
Yes, he does First
Take. So did that show just failed miserably? Because I know that the everything Bayless basically has done without Stephen A. has been a disaster. Am I right about that?
It was a disaster because there were a number of reasons why that was a disaster. That would be a whole other segment. Skip and Shannon didn't exactly go well together. Shannon
but the
was
show
fine,
basically
but...
generated, you know, like no ratings.
Right, and they paid a lot of money. She then, when that show kind of dissolved or when it
seemed like... So she was a part of that show.
She was a part of that show, and then she joined another show on the network, which is called Speak for Yourself. It's a cast of... There's like four people on a desk, and it's like a worse version, if you remember Sports Nation on ESPN for a while. It's like a worse version of that. It's LaShawn McCoy. It's one of your favorites, Emmanuel Acho, who is also in this lawsuit. And then it'll occasionally be like Paul Pierce or Keyshawn Johnson.
Is he one of my favorites, or have we just made fun of him in the past?
Tongue firmly placed in cheek. Okay. He's very annoying on social media.
Because I don't even know what he's on. What is he on?
He's on Speak
this
for Yourself.
This show? Sports Nation?
Or Speak for Yourself. That's their, like, I call it their, like, Q-list version of Sports Nation. I liked Sports Nation when I was
younger. Who was on Sports Nation?
That's where Colin Cowherd got one of his bigger breaks on ESPN, but that was Michelle Beadle, Max Kellerman, Marcellus Wiley.
Let me just say this as just a quick aside. I've always respected the hell out of Colin Cowherd. I'm not a massive fan of Cowherd, but anybody that's ever done this knows how hard he works at it, how prepared he is. You know, I'm not going to sit here and talk a lot about the trade, but when you do, you know, 3-4 hours a day solo, that's probably the hardest thing to do in kind of long form talk radio.
Definitely.
Or I guess he's on TV now. And he did it. He was obviously, he had that show for years on ESPN. It wasn't my favorite show, but he was a relentless preparation guy, and I always thought that was to be admired, and he's had a ton of success, you know, as a radio show host. Anyway, I'm getting sidetracked here, and now we've got a hard break, so we still haven't gotten to the lawsuit itself and what it's about, but I think you've given us a nice little primer on who Joy Taylor is, because I sense that there are some people like me that maybe recognize the face but would not have been able to place the name with any of these sports networks for big money. We'll continue on this briefly when we come back.